Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 447, update on September 11th and related matters, being recorded on February 29th of 2004. Sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record shows on Real Audio, more recent programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, older programs available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL, linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio-equipped For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word. Within a week or so of the airing of this program, there will be a detailed, article-length, annotated description of For the Record program number 447 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Again, www.spitfirelist.com. Note that at the beginning of each description, there is a button to click on for those who would like to support the work that I'm doing. Also, the For the Record section of the Spitfire website is now equipped with a search engine, so that now you can search the website in order to locate programs that have specific points of information. Now, we're going to continue looking at some of the tangled webs that continue to enmesh those who are trying to straighten out events related to September 11th. One of the things that we've touched on in For the Record 433 and 435, and that is that some of the principals in the Altaqua network, specifically Altaqua's founder, Youssef Nada, and also Ahmed Idris Nasruddin, continue to operate. I would note that there are many connections between the Altaqua network and the targets of Operation Green Quest that we looked at in side one of this program. Note that those targets of Green Quest are inextricably linked with elements that are at the core of the Republican Party, including Grover Norquist, his Islamic Institute, Karl Rove, Bush's number one advisor, and people like Talat Otman. What we're going to look at next concerns the expiration of a UN task force that was helping to interdict the flow of terrorist monies. And this would appear to indicate that the terrorist monies will flow more easily. They certainly will be minus at least one major opponent. We took a look at the Bush administration's interdiction of the Operation Green Quest, the most important step that has been taken to date to interdict terrorist funding. This is from Newsweek of February 2nd of 2004, an article by Mark Hosenball titled, No More Watchdog. A UN task force that fought the flow of money to Al-Qaeda expired last month. After 9/11, UN members were required to freeze the assets of companies, charities, and individuals whom law enforcement and intelligence agencies believed were funneling cash to Osama bin Laden's network or the Taliban regime. The monitoring group ruffled feathers last year when it complained that some suspect individuals and groups continued to operate, including branches of a major Saudi charity, the Al Haramain Foundation. Last week, the Saudis and Treasury Secretary John Snow announced that a handful of Al Haramain offices, including two branches linked to the U.S. embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania, only now are being closed. Al Haramain's Saudi headquarters remains open. UN monitors also noted that principals in Altaqua, a Swiss-based Islamic financial network linked to bin Laden, stayed in business by renaming a couple of companies in Liechtenstein. A resolution to reestablish the UN task force may be introduced this week. But some UN officials fear the monitor's power to criticize member countries may be sharply curtailed. So this bodes poorly for the future of attempting to interdict things like September 11th. Again, in many broadcasts, I've noted that the attempts to crack down on the international terrorist funding conduits have failed, in large part at least because the very same epicenters for terrorist financing are also some of the offshore tax havens that are utilized by major corporations and individuals to skirt the tax regulations of their native countries. We've talked about that in many programs. What we're going to look at next is a major article from Le Nouvel Observateur, who this was researched and translated for us by the remarkable Lucy Commissar. This deals with not only the Muslim Brotherhood, but with the Muslim Brotherhood's kingpin Saeed Ramadan's role in allegedly founding the bank Al-Taqwa. We're also going to take a look at Saeed Ramadan's apparent role in helping to midwife, so to speak, the birth of the Muslim World League, one of the major Saudi Islamic outreach institutions, and also one of the organizations that we looked at inside one of this program that has been involved with helping to finance Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. Bear in mind that later on in this program, we're going to be taking a look at the nuke trafficking ring. We're going to look at the Bush administration's, plural, roles in either interdicting investigations of that nuke trafficking ring or at least passively ignoring that. When one combines the failure to adequately interdict terrorist financing with the interdiction of some of the nuclear smuggling rings, and those nuclear smuggling rings are connected to elements that in turn are tangential to Al-Qaeda and other Islamic fundamentalist organizations, one has a truly frightening brew, because sooner or later, the money is going to find the right individual or right institution, and sooner or later, the price will be right. And nukes, if they haven't already fallen into terrorist hands, will do just that. By the way, I would not entirely dismiss the possibility of white supremacist or Nazi terror elements, perhaps working in conjunction with Islamists, performing some act of nuclear terrorism in the future. Again, research and translation credit goes to Lucy Commissar for the following article. This comes from Le Nouvel Observateur of January 31st of 2004. The article is titled Secrets of the Financial Holy War. This is an interview by Le Nouvel Observateur with Richard Labeviere, the author of the book Dollars for Terror, arguably the best book about September 11th, and a book that was written published in French in 1999 and in English in 2000. This interview reads as follows. Le Nouvel Observateur. In one of your works, speaking here to Richard Labeviere, in one of your works, you claim that the father of Tariq Ramadan, Saeed Ramadan, was one of the founders of Bank Al-Taqwa, suspected by the United States to have financed Al-Qaeda. Richard Labeviere. In April of 1998 in Cairo, I interviewed Mustafa Mashour, the guide of the Brotherhood of the Muslim Brothers at the seat of this organization, located at the edge of the Nile. One had then evoked the operation of the Islamic banks. The guide assured me that Youssef Nada, the financier of the Muslim Brothers, and Saeed Ramadan, the father of Tariq Ramadan, who were friendly since their escape from Egypt in the middle of the 1950s, were at the origin of the creation of Bank Al-Taqwa, fiduciary company based in Lugano, whose seat was in the Bahamas. This establishment managed the money of the members of the Muslim Brotherhood. The guide, now deceased, said to me that the Ramadan brothers always acted in the logic of their great father, Hassan al-Banna, that they were regarded as agents of the interests of the founder of the Brotherhood. By the way, Saeed Ramadan was one of the kingpins of the Muslim Brotherhood, its effective head for quite some time. He was the son-in-law of the founder of Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. As we've looked at in many broadcasts, the Muslim Brotherhood was allied with fascist Italy and Nazi Germany in World War II and has sort of synthesized fascist economic ideology and political ideology with an Islamic totalitarian theocratic viewpoint. Continuing with the interview. Nouvel Observateur. That does not make any, therefore, the accomplices of bin Laden. Referring to, by the way, this is, of course, a translation from French. That does not necessarily mean that these members of the Muslim Brotherhood and principals of Al-Taqwa were automatically accomplices of bin Laden. Richard Labeviere. No, of course, but this bank, Al-Taqwa, is suspected by the FBI shortly after 11th of September to have taken part in the financing of bin Laden. It is reproduced on the blacklist of the Americans of terrorist financing organizations. However, this kind of Islamic bank is quasi-impenetrable. It does not have the right to make interest. It thus makes assemblages of risk capital. Translation, it invests in concrete operations, the financing of NGOs, etc. In fact, multi-stage financial arrangements feed a myriad of charitable organizations. It is what the specialists call bleaching back, or in zigzag, a labyrinth in which the investigators lose themselves invariably, or get lost invariably. When one examines the financial exercises of these establishments, a whole fringe of their activities is registered under the heading of the zakat, the religious tax, the obligation of charity, by the way, that's Muslim charity, a true clandestine area. However, one knows that the zakat is used to finance offshore companies, protected perfectly by the same bank secrecy, and also of the Islamic NGOs, which are completely unverifiable and uncontrollable. Again, the zakat, the religious tax, an obligation inherent in the Muslim faith, is used to finance offshore accounts and offshore companies that are protected by bank secrecy, and in turn, these offshore companies help to finance some of the Islamic NGOs, which in turn, some of which are used to finance terrorism. One of the things that makes this a very sensitive area is that some of the Islamic charities also perform very real and significant charitable functions within the Islamic world. Also, many of them perform terrorist functions or help to finance terrorist operations. That's one of the things that makes this a truly complex and a very sensitive issue, and it's something that is going to have to be dealt with. I'm afraid that the U.S. and perhaps the international legal system is not prepared to deal effectively with something as complex and clandestine as this. And yet, if it isn't dealt with effectively, there are going to be a real tragedy with something or perhaps more than one thing that makes September 11th look like a kindergarten exercise. Continuing, since November of 2001, Bank Al-Taqwa changed names, but Youssef Nada, the friend of Saeed Ramadan, and I would add parenthetically a former Nazi intelligence agent, continues its activities. The investigation does nothing but start. It has yet to conclude effectively. Nouvelle Observatoire. What can the Swiss authorities do to conclude it? In other words, basically, what can the Swiss authorities do to bring the investigation to an effective conclusion? Richard Labaviere. The problem is that in Switzerland, the banking interests are the absolute priority. For the federal government, it's imperative not to annoy the Saudis and their bankers. The experts of AFATF, the Group of Financial Action, consider the assets the Saudis placed in Switzerland at between $30 and $60 billion. It's a vital activity for this particular country, meaning Switzerland. However, nobody really wants to unearth a scandal which could kill the hen that lays the golden eggs. Judge Carla Del Ponte, even at the time when she was Attorney General of the Swiss Confederation, after the attack at Luxor in 1997, was accused of inertia. To defend herself, she explained that she was confronted with a wall of money. By the way, Judge Carla Del Ponte is a law partner of Per Felice Barchi. He is the lawyer for Youssef Nada and also a principal with the Banco del Gottardo, also very, very close to and inextricably linked with the Bank Al-Taqwa. But the Ramadans are not directly implied in this history. Richard Labaviere. Historically, Saeed Ramadan was one of the founders of the World Islamic League in 1961. It is him, meaning Saeed Ramadan, who advised the Saudis to finance the Dawah in Europe, the propagation of the faith by money, a kind of financial holy war. It is one of the key characters of this ideological war. He, meaning Saeed Ramadan, is a central character of the international branch of the Brotherhood of the Muslim Brothers. The Egyptian intelligence services have information that indicate that he was working directly for the Americans in the years 1960. By the way, one of the things that makes the conceptualization of the Muslim Brotherhood sort of difficult, is that it is very anti-American, and yet because it is also a theocratic organization, during many periods of time during the Cold War, the CIA would use the Muslim Brotherhood to counteract secular leftist organizations or regimes in the Middle East. And yet now, in the 2000s, the Muslim Brotherhood is a militant enemy of the United States, despite that fact, again, that was used during the Cold War period to help suppress secular leftist organizations. So note again that Saeed Ramadan was one of the principal figures in helping to persuade the Saudis to found the Muslim World League in the early 1960s. The Muslim World League is one of the major Saudi Islamic charitable outreach organizations. It also is one of the organizations that helps to finance Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other terrorist organizations. In a number of broadcasts, we've taken a look at the fact that when Saeed Ramadan moved to Europe, and specifically to Switzerland, he did so to work with François Genoux, a prime operative of the underground Reich. He was a Nazi spy prior to and during World War II, became very close to the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, helped to disperse Nazi monies in the post-World War II period, and also was intimately involved with the Odessa Network, helping to work with and secret abroad SS war criminals. François Genoux became one of the primary exponents of post-World War II terrorism, and François Genoux's name crops up in connection with September 11th in a number of different contexts, although he himself committed suicide in 1996. Bearing in mind that in the time period that Richard LaBaviere was talking about, the early 60s, that was the time period in which Saeed Ramadan apparently was instrumental in persuading the Saudis to begin the Muslim World League. It was in that period that Saeed Ramadan was working with François Genoux. Reviewing an item we looked at in For the Record 357, this is from an interview that took place on Bayerischer Rundfunk Online, that's the Bavarian state radio. It's called Insider Trading Prior to the Terror Attacks in the U.S., Speculating on Terror, Who Profited from the Attacks? It's by Rolf Bouvier and Pierre Mathias. And again, this is from September 25th, 2001. Quoting from the text, financial expert Ernest Bacchus of Luxembourg has studied white-collar crime in the field of banking for many years. According to him, there are indications of unusual transactions with which the groups associated with bin Laden could have earned money. You can, for example, examine whether within a certain time period there has been an attack against the securities of a given airline company. Since these securities are safe in a clearing system, unquote, you can't get an overall view who the owner was at a given time, unquote. And notice the next portion of this interview. According to Baca's information, the trail leads to Switzerland, to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer François Genoux and evidently still survives. By the way, this may be an allusion to Al-Taqwa. That is unclear. François Genoux was very close to Ahmed Huber of Al-Taqwa as well. Continuing, says Baca's, quote, one of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the family, one of its investment bankers. It's known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executor for Hitler and part of the terror milieu. So note that Ernest Bacchus in this interview, and again we're recapping this from FTR 357, indicated that Genoux was an investment advisor to the bin Laden family and helped to bank their funds. He was also very close to Al-Taqwa. That may have been a reference to Al-Taqwa in that interview. Now we're going to look at the nuclear smuggling network that apparently had as one of its principals Pakistan, and that also helped to enrich various other countries with nuclear technology, including Libya, Iran, and North Korea. One of the interesting things about this nuclear smuggling ring is that, first of all, it involves some very interesting elements in Europe. We'll talk about those in a minute. It also, apparently, the investigation of this nuclear smuggling was spiked not only by the second Bush administration, but also was at least passively frustrated by the first Bush administration. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This is from Greg Palast's website at gregpalast.com. The article here is posted from February 9th of 2004. It's headlined, Con Job. Bush spiked probe of Pakistan's Dr. Strangelove, BBC reported in 2001. On November 7, 2001, BBC TV and The Guardian of London reported that the Bush administration thwarted investigations of Dr. A.Q. Khan, who this week confessed to selling atomic secrets to Libya, North Korea, and Iran. The Bush administration has expressed shock at the disclosures that Pakistan, our ally in the war on terror, has been running a nuclear secrets bazaar. In fact, according to the British news team sources, Bush did not know these facts because shortly after his inauguration, his National Security Agency effectively stymied the probe of Khan Research Laboratories. The CIA and other agents could not investigate the spread of Islamic bombs through Pakistan because funding appeared to originate in, three guesses, Saudi Arabia. Skipping down. According to both sources and documents obtained by the BBC, the Bush administration's spike of the investigation of Dr. Khan's lab followed from a wider policy of protecting key Saudi Arabians, including the bin Laden family. Skipping down again. The back-off directive and the Islamic bomb. Despite these tantalizing facts, Abdullah and his operations were A-OK with the FBI chiefs, if not their working agents. Just a dumb snafu. Not according to a top-level CIA operative who spoke with us on condition of strictest anonymity. After Bush took office, he said, there was a major policy shift at the National Security Agency. Investigators were ordered to back off from any inquiries into Saudi Arabian financing of terror networking. By the way, Abdullah refers to Abdullah bin Laden, associated with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, an alleged Al-Qaeda funding conduit. That also was very closely affiliated with the Muslim World League that we looked at. Abdullah bin Laden also was associated through the World Assembly of Muslim Youth with Jamal Barzinji, an Al-Taqwa associate, and a member of the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist that we looked at in Side 1. Continuing, after Bush took office, he said, that's the CIA operative alluded to here, there was a major policy shift at the National Security Agency. Investigators were ordered to back off, unquote, from any inquiries into Saudi Arabian financing of terror networks, especially if they touched on Saudi royals and their retainers. That put the bin Ladens, a family worth a reported $12 billion and a vital arm of the Saudi royal household, off limits for investigation. Osama was the lone exception. He remained a wanted man, but agents could not look too closely at how he filled his piggy bank. The key rule of any investigation, follow the money, was now violated, and investigations at least before September 11th began to die. And there was a lot to investigate, or in the case of the CIA and FBI, under Bush, a lot to ignore. Through well-known international arms dealers, I'm sorry, but in this business, sinners are better sources than saints, our team was tipped off to a meeting of Saudi billionaires at the Hotel Royal Monceau in Paris in May of 1996 with the financial representative of Osama bin Laden's network. The Saudis, including a key Saudi prince joined by Muslim and non-Muslim gun traffickers, met to determine who would pay how much to Osama. This was not so much an act of support, but of protection, a payoff to keep the mad bomber away from Saudi Arabia. The crucial question here is that if I could learn about this meeting, how did the CIA miss it? In fact, since the first edition of this book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy by Greg Palast, other sources have disclosed that the meeting was monitored by French intelligence. Since U.S. intelligence was thus likely informed, the question becomes, why didn't the government immediately move against the Saudis? I probed our CIA contact for specifics of investigations that were hampered by orders to back off the Saudis. He told us that the Khan Laboratories investigation had been effectively put on hold. You may never have heard of Khan Laboratories, but if this planet blows to pieces this year, it will likely be thanks to Khan Labs creating nuclear warheads for Pakistan's military. because investigators have been tracking the funding for this so-called Islamic bomb back to Saudi Arabia. Under Bush security restrictions, the inquiry was stymied. The restrictions were lifted, the agent told me, without a hint of dark humor on September 11th. And time permitting, we will touch on some of those later. Apparently, the first Bush administration also helped to frustrate, and also the Reagan administration helped to frustrate the investigation into the Islamic bomb, precisely because of the Pakistani role in helping to support the Afghan Mujahideen effort. It was that same Afghan Mujahideen effort against the Soviets that spawned the funding conduits that were targeted in Operation Green Quest. They later shift to the funding to become the funding conduits for al-Qaeda. An article about the first Bush administration's role in frustrating this organization appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, February 28th of 2004. An article by Matt Kelly of the Associated Press, Pakistan threatened to give Iran nuclear know-how in 1990. It reads in part, Pakistan warned the United States 14 years ago that it might give nuclear technology to Iran, but the administration of President Bush's father did little to follow up, former Pentagon officials say. Word of the 1990 threat from Pakistan's top general apparently was not passed along to the Clinton administration when it took office 3 years later, according to information by the Associated Press. Skipping down. Sikorsky and Rowan said former President George H.W. Bush's administration had done little to follow up on Beg, that's a Pakistani general, General Mirza Aslam Beg, on Beg's warning. In hindsight, maybe before or after that, they did make some transfers, Rowan said. Ashton Carter, an assistant defense secretary from 1993 to 1996, says he didn't remember even being told about the problem when he joined the Pentagon. And the article also explains that the Pakistanis had favored status because of their role as a proxy in the Afghan Mujahideen support effort against the Soviet Union. And I would note that apparently Europe has been a primary area of operations for this nuclear smuggling ring. Last item from this program, the New York Times of February 19th of 2004 had an article by Craig S. Smith, Roots of Pakistan Atomic Scandal Traced to Europe. And apparently much of this scandal comes from Europe. The problem began with the 1970 Treaty of Almelo, under which Britain, Germany, and the Netherlands agreed to develop centrifuges to enrich uranium jointly, ensuring their nuclear power industry a fuel source independent of the United States. Urenco, or the Uranium Enrichment Company, was established the next year with its primary enrichment plant at Almelo in the Netherlands. And the article explains that Dr. Khan basically got his start in helping to smuggle this technology, working for Urenco. And skipping down, talking about the leaking of this technology. But there were clues that the technology had spread even further. A German intelligence investigation determined that Iraq and possibly Iran and North Korea had obtained uranium melting expertise stolen from Urenco in 1984. Mr. Hibbs reported in Nucleonics Week several years later. In 1989, two engineers, Bruno Stemmler and Karl-Heinz Schaub, who had worked for Germany's MAN New Technology, another Urenco subcontractor, sold plans for advanced uranium enrichment centrifuges to Iraq. They went to Baghdad to help solve problems in making the equipment work. As we looked at in For the Record 395, Karl-Heinz Schaub was a protege of Dr. Gernot Zippe, who worked for Degussa, and who had helped to pilot the atomic bomb project developed by Adolf Hitler. And one of the export officials for the West German government, and also a former Degussa official, was an SS officer who had been involved, basically one of the people, with a former SS officer who had been involved with the West German government's, then West German government's plans to interdict, quote, interdict, unquote, the smuggling of nuclear technology. In the description of this program, I will flesh out some of the information that I've had to omit from this article due to the limitations of time. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 447, update on September 11th and related matters being recorded on February 29th of 2004. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.